Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast.
Hello again, listeners. Welcome to another Daily Canon Weekly Podcast. This week we're doing a bit of a surprise, surprise lockdown podcast. And also, because we are on lockdown and there's no matches to talk about, and frankly, I don't want to get into lengthy diatribes about the politics of football clubs furloughing, although we might take a dig at Spurs and Liverpool later, I'm joined by Jack Williams-Spicer, who is a Man United fan, apologies to listeners, but he's an Arsenal sympathetic Man United fan, and we thought we'd have a bit of a meander down memory lane talking about the great rivalry between the two clubs that obviously was formative for both of ourselves and also, I would assume, for many of you. So we're going to talk about some of the games between the two teams. Obviously there'll be differences of opinion. I'm sure there'll be a little bit of controversy in there, but I thought it'd be an interesting thing. A, something we could enjoy while there's no football on, and B, it's always good to see what the other side thinks. So, hello, Jack. How are you?
Hello. Yes, I'm good, thank you. I'm a bit tired today. I've had a busy day. I haven't left the house, but I've been non-stop. But no, thank you for having me.
Well, Jack, for listeners, is someone who has a very small and very wonderful and very energetic young boy who I'm sure adds to a certain amount to the daily workload.
Yes, he sure does. I don't think I get up and down off the floor as much as I have done in the last 4 weeks.
Who needs a yoga when you've got a child? Yeah. without sort of beating around the bush, I mean, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions before we dive into the meat of it, which is, we've talked about this a little bit before, but how did you find yourself becoming a Man United fan?
Well, I was very young, and my granddad actually bought me my first United kit when I was about four. And, you know, being a classic sort of United fan, you know, I was born and raised in London. So, yeah, and I think a lot of my friends supported United as well. So that probably helped sort of build me up in supporting that team. And I don't regret it because of the, you know, the years that followed.
And you said to me before that you've always had a bit of a soft spot for Arsenal. So I know you've spoken to me about this before, but yeah, just tell listeners how that sort of came about.
Well, my granddad was an Arsenal fan. So was my nan. But my granddad died before I was born, about 3 or 4 months before I was born. So, and I'm probably 99% sure that I'd probably be an Arsenal fan if he was alive when I was born. So that's why I've got a little soft spot for Arsenal. And I've loved our sort of rivalry because I find it a bit, classic rivalry.
Yeah.
Which you sort of, you know, you look back at it and you're like, oh, that's kind of what football was for me. And I'm probably a bit biased because, you know, that was me growing up. But I just feel like those days and those kind of players kind of don't exist anymore.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly The peak period of the Arsenal United rivalry encapsulates a really interesting time in British football as well, because it's that period where we have still the very English league, but with that foreign influence starting to become prevalent, but not as broad as it is now. So the foreign players that came to the UK at that period of time had to anglicise their play style pretty quickly, because, you know, with the way that games are refereed then and the way that a lot of the football was, you know, the football that Man City play now is obviously an incredibly high level, but I would think they'd probably be less able to play it when you had midfields
kicking people.
Yeah, and not just kicking people, but kicking them really fucking hard.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is the difference. I mean, you could have, obviously, you could get a lot away with a lot more like 20 years ago than you can now. Like, you get pulled up for such ridiculous sort of fouls or non-fouls, as it were, because I think there's a lot more play acting as well.
I mean, I think it's also that as the games become more technical, it's been easier for smaller, less physical players to thrive, whereas that was the real period where there was a great increase in technical capacity within the league, but there was still enough just physicality that you had to be a technical player at that stage, you had to still be able to endure a really quite physical game at the same time. So you ended up with these players that, well, you had the best players in England at the time were the best among the best players in the world at that particular that absolute peak of that rivalry.
And at United and Arsenal mainly, because, you know, they were the ones winning the leagues and the FA Cups.
Yeah, until Abramovich's money turned up, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah, and Chelsea had to ruin the party.
So, I mean, just before we get into the individual bits and bobs, you know, what are your first, like, really clear memories as a United fan? Like, in terms of maybe a game or the players that really stood out for you, first things up?
Yeah. The first sort of football memory that really sticks in my mind would probably be Euro 96. So football kind of sticks in my mind sort of around that period. Because I remember, you know, watching games with my nan and like watching the Arsenal United games with her. And really getting into like a real rivalry between us two as well, which is quite like, it was really nice. I never really had that with like, because my dad's a, I don't know if I can say it on here, but my dad's a Spurs fan.
We will have a cross to bear. Jesus, that must have been horrible for him when you were growing up. He's a Spurs fan. You went to support Man United, and it's the period where Spurs were the shittest compared to Arsenal.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it was probably the 97-98 season that obviously sticks in my mind and obviously sticks in a lot of minds of Arsenal fans too.
Well, certainly, yeah.
And obviously the year after, obviously all those memories have stayed in my head.
Yes, funnily enough. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I always say that I was very lucky the timing I became an Arsenal fan, because I started supporting Arsenal basically on New Year's Day 1988, because that was the first time I was taken to a football match, and it was an Arsenal match at Highbury.
Yeah.
And within a year, Arsenal won the league for the first time in a generation. Mm. And then went on and won the league again a couple of years after that against the almighty Liverpool team, and then won a couple of FA Cups. Or FA Cup and the League Cup, and then won the Cup Winners' Cup. So I, very early on into my football supporting life, had some really nice experiences.
Yeah, what a lovely way to be joined into the Gunner family.
Well, exactly. And within a year and a half, having Michael Thomas scoring that goal at Anfield, you know, I mean, that's one of those, you know, I imagine, you know, possibly not quite the same for you because you've been a fan for slightly longer, but, you know, like the European Cup final last minute goal for United in 99.
Yeah.
I mean, to have that quite early on, I mean, that's like fucking straight into my veins. You know, that's the kind of thing where you're like, well, after that, how can you not be hooked? You know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that moment, just because Munich scored so early on, and, you know, it got to the 90th minute, and, you know, as a United fan, you always sort of, you literally play to the last second and the final whistle, and, you know, never give up. And we used to get slated for scoring so many goals in extra time, like
Fergie time,
or Fergie time. Yeah. But I loved Fergie time. But we just kept on going, and that was just a huge attribute to him and the players that he had. But to have that moment of, ah, oh, shit, man, like, this is going to go to extra time. I don't know if I can deal with another half an hour and possibly, like, penalties as well. But as soon as Babyface Assassin got that goal, it was just euphoric. It was such an amazing moment.
I mean, it was one of those ones where, you know, obviously I was an Arsenal fan, and so I always found myself torn watching the match because I didn't really want United to get the treble because they'd been, like, it'd been so close. If Arsenal had got two more goals at the right points, they would have won the double that year. And so it felt like United getting the treble was a real slap in the face. But then, as you say, Munich scored early. Mm. And I've never really liked Bayern. There's a sort of arrogance they carry, which you can do when basically you own the Bundesliga.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can buy the best players of all your rivals anytime they start getting too good. But it was also their sort of slightly snide, time-wasting niggliness in the game, really. So I found myself exhilarated by United's victory, even though I knew it was made me slightly sick inside.
Although, I felt like watching that game, though, we were very, very fortunate at times, because, you know, they hit the woodwork, and I just felt like that season was like meant to be. It had that kind of feel to it, and the things that went for us really well, when it was like the FA Cup semi-final, the Champions League final, and one of the last game against Spurs, which, you know, Gary Neville lofted that ball over the whole Spurs team, and Andy Cole just instinctively took it down and just lobbed, I think it was Ian Walker in goal.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, and just even that moment was just, again, euphoric, and it was just such an amazing treble winning season, and no one's done it since.
Well, I remember watching that game with Spurs, because obviously Arsenal needed United to lose because Arsenal had gone up to Leeds and basically had loads of players injured and hit the post about four times, and then Leeds scored in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And so that was the difference between the two teams. And then when Spurs went up, I was like, there's no fucking way Spurs are going to hold on to this. There's no way, because their entire fan base wants them to lose.
Yeah.
And it's also apart from like when, who was it, Mendes in midfield or had that. There was a couple of games in the last decade where Spurs won at Old Trafford. But before that, they had basically turned up at Old Trafford and got bitch slapped every year.
Yeah, well, it was like that game that we played against them, and they went 2-0 up against us, or like 3-0 up, and we came back and we ended up winning 5-3
in
the second half.
Standard.
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, obviously,
in those days, anyway.
So we both had that wonderful introduction, and then obviously they formed this rivalry. I mean, you know, older fans will remember that the rivalry sort of started before that period, but Liverpool were the ones that everyone wanted to knock off their fucking perch, as Ferguson loves to take credit for, despite the fact it was Arsenal that did it. But anyway, because you know, the team that won the league either side of the last Liverpool league victory was Arsenal, and Liverpool have only come in even second about twice since. But anyway, you know, it was the fact that Ferguson had been offered the Arsenal job in 1986, but he turned it down. Well, he didn't turn it down. He said, well, I can only take it after the summer, because he wanted to, he'd sort of ended up with the Scotland job, and he wanted to focus on that for the World Cup. And Arsenal were like, well, we can't just sit here for 4 months without a manager. So they got George Graham instead. And so that sort of meant that rivalry was there, because Ferguson wanted to show Arsenal. But also there was, as we alluded to chatting earlier, there was the love affair between Brian McClair and Nigel Winterburn that erupted a few years later, and older fans will certainly remember Winterburn virtually blowing McClair kisses after he missed that penalty at Highbury, and then as soon as the chance came in 91, McClair gave him a fucking good kicking.
Never forget that memory.
And obviously, there's the 2 points deducted, but Arsenal still beat Liverpool. But so there was already, that was kind of there, but it wasn't really there.
When Ferguson did take over, it was the first sort of 3 or 4 years, like, was there a sense of like, oh, thank God we didn't get him?
Well, not really, because we were very glad we got George Graham, because obviously he won two leagues and in three years, you know, at a time when Arsenal were really not fancied with a largely homegrown more budget team. But, you know, even then as a kid, I was sort of looking at United and I was like, I mean, there was a group of young players came through. They didn't quite make it in the end, but they were called Fergie's fledglings, you know. There was very much an idea that he was a guy who was getting rid of the old guard and creating a new team. I mean, he did go on that terrible run in 1990 where Mark Robbins basically saved his job with that FA Cup extra time goal. But you could see that he was building something. And obviously, we couldn't have begun to anticipate what happened next.
No, of course not.
But you know, anyone who was really following football, and I got from disinterested to obsessed pretty quickly, knew that he'd done a lot at Aberdeen and knew that he, you know, he was no mug. So, you know, by that stage, I mean, I have to admit, even though I didn't have anything against United, I did support Crystal Palace in the cup final that year. Partly because I'd fucking loved it when they beat Liverpool in the semi-final. That remains one of my favourite non-Arsenal games, is Crystal Palace 4, Liverpool 3 in the FA Cup semi-final. And actually, even before he came to Arsenal, Ian Wright had already become a player I'd sort of slightly fallen in love with.
We knew what the goal was.
And obviously, you know, there was the cup final performance against United. But then Arsenal dropped off a bit and United became more dominant, but they choked a couple of years when it was Blackburn and Leeds competing for the title, even though United were probably the better teams.
Yeah, I mean, the Blackburn year was painful.
It was the game at West Ham, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But then,
I think the thing that I love about Fergie is that he was able to create not just that team in the 90s, but he was able to create three or four teams over.
Yeah.
Before he actually finally left in 2013.
Well, that's obviously what cements his legacy, as rather than being a good manager, to a truly exceptional one, because most managers, even top managers, can maybe get a couple of teams at the same club before they have to move on. Whereas he managed to get three or four. I mean, but I suppose it makes perfect sense to start with talking about exactly that, the class of, what was it, 92?
92, yeah.
And the incredible impact they had on United. And as an Arsenal fan who'd grown up seeing young players come through and win us the title in 89 and 91, you know, when Man United started doing the same, I couldn't help sort of appreciate it, just because it's so rare to get a crop of young players, you know, three, four, five, six, come through in such a short space of time. And obviously Giggs was ahead of the game. He got into the first team very young, and all the girls at school fancied him, and it was very young. And then Beckham turned up and all the girls at school fancied him. But
I mean, I fancy David Beckham. I mean, who doesn't?
Well, it's funny. I remember seeing him play on loan for Preston North End and finding out it was a Man United player. And then it was my first year at university, just before I went to university. My first year at university, I signed up for the fantasy football, the university fantasy football, and it was just before Beckham was cemented in the team. So you remember he got that goal against Wimbledon in the first game of the season from back. The week before, had put him in my fantasy team.
Oh, right.
And he scored an absolute fuckload of fantasy points for me that year. Because I'd just seen him play and I was just like, you know, this guy's really got something.
Well, did you know that he played with David Moyes was in that team as well?
Yeah.
Which is so bizarre.
Slight contrast of ability there. So obviously that was sort of your first year, was that summer, or first year of being really aware of it, and then that United team.
I mean, it's, you know, people thought that Fergie was crazy selling the likes of Mark Hughes, Kanchelskis and Paul Ince, you know, and those kind of players, and get rid of them, and Alan Hansen, you know, said that famous thing, you can't win anything with kids. And just blew up in his face, which was quite fun because he was a Liverpool player.
Well, he was largely bitter because Arsenal done it with a lot of young players when he was at Liverpool. So it was kind of like,
done like the young ones coming through.
But you know, that really was a an amazing generation, and it looked like they were going to basically own the league for years.
Yeah.
And then Arsene Wenger turned up out of the blue.
Were you a Wenger out, or do you miss him, or do you think he should have given more time to try and develop a team?
I think he stayed a year longer than he should have done, right. And that was my feeling at the time. Even though I understood why, for club reasons and also for loyalty reasons, why there was that extra year. I mean, the club weren't ready for him to leave because he was so central to everything.
Yeah.
But it was just clear that all of the great things that he'd brought to Arsenal and English football as his competitive advantages had, one by one, everyone else had caught up. And then and everyone else had caught up and had more money. So you've when everyone else catches up and you don't continue evolving... Mm. Then eventually you get diminishing returns. And, you know, obviously he had the dietary thing, he had the great scouting contacts, he had this international scouting network he built at Arsenal, the idea of going out and finding young players from other leagues,
yeah.
You know, the
French league.
Well, the French league, the Spanish league, you know.
Yeah.
But eventually everyone was like, well, this shit works, well, we'll do it.
Mm.
And then... it came to a point where there was nothing, apart from his personal qualities as a human being and his relationship with players, there was nothing about his approach that other people weren't either imitating or improving upon by the time he departed. Because, you know, it's 20-odd years. There's a reason why everyone thinks Ferguson is one of the best managers of all time anywhere in the world, because he did it for such a long period of time, which is unique.
Yeah, but I think you alluded to it before. Like, even when Chelsea came in with money, you know, other teams still won the league and still won things and everything. But then the game really changed, I think, when City came in with all their money, because they didn't necessarily have amazing managers, but they had a shit ton of money to buy any players that they wanted. And I think that was around the time that Fergie decided, you know what, I've done my bit.
Well,
he always said that he'd leave us in a good position, but I really believe that he didn't, because a lot of our players were aging.
That's partly why he left, wasn't it? Because that last title win was he'd squeezed every single drop of whatever out of those players.
Out of a team that weren't really, like, out of all the teams of his history, weren't really up there in the best.
No. But then, as Wenger found, you know, when you've got two or three, rather than one other team to compete with for the best players, you've got three or four other teams, two of whom can pay higher wages and transfer fees than you.
Yeah.
Suddenly your job gets a lot more difficult. I mean, part of the reason why Ferguson was so good at rebuilding his teams is because for a period of time, United were the number one choice for every player and for a period of time had more money. So, you know, he could spend 30 million on Rio Ferdinand when no one else is spending more than 10 million on a centre-back, because he knew this was going to be the best young defender in the country, so we'll just buy him. Whereas it was hard for other teams to compete with that, but by the time he left... you know, if he wanted to spend 30 million on a defender, Man City would say, well, maybe we'll spend 40 million.
Yeah, but at that point, United were a global sort of brand, weren't they? Like, they had all that money coming in and they were like a money-making machine.
But I think it was the same thing, a little bit of the same thing with Wenger, is when you've got a manager has been in so successful for so long and knows what things are worth. The idea of spending like 80 million on Paul Pogba, could you ever imagine Ferguson doing that?
No.
And that's the thing, it's the same with Wenger, you know. When he finally had money to spend in his last few years, he didn't spend it very well because it felt like unnatural to him to spend 30 million pounds on a player. Felt like it felt you could see him kind of not being entirely comfortable with it.
I don't find it comfortable either, but sadly, that's just where football is at the moment.
Well, we'll see if current events have any impact on that.
Well, they put a price tag of 200 million on Kane. So, you know, they're not going to change it for the top players, but
no.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, Spurs can ask to, they've put that price tag on Kane because they know no one's going to pay it.
Yeah. And they don't want to sell to a rival either. So.
Well, they don't want to sell. I mean, you know, Harry Kane is the best thing about Tottenham Hotspur. You know, as Pochettino's left and that team started to break up, Kane, apart from like Song Hyun Min, he's the one that, apart from being injured, has sustained not quite the same level of play, but the same level of impact.
Mm.
And he's their homegrown poster child, and obviously they want to be seen as a big club, so they don't want to be selling their number one guy without knowing they're going to get so much for it that it'll even make their fan base happy.
Yeah, exactly.
But going back to a time before all this money.
Yeah, please, you know, a simpler time.
A simpler time when there were no oligarchs or oil barons.
No.
So, I mean, as a United fan, at what point, I guess, did you realise that Arsene Wenger's Arsenal were actually, like, a thing?
It's a really good question. Like, obviously, I knew the days of Graham because they were quite early on. But what year was it that Wenger started?
Well, he joined, it was 96, because Bruce Rioch had been sacked just before the season started, but Wenger still had a contract in Japan. And yeah. So he joined, like, October 96, mm-hmm. or... But he told us to buy Vieira in the meantime.
Great advice.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing, actually, because no one knew who Wenger...
A lot of my memories sort of come in those... from like 96, 99, all my sort of first memories are around then. So obviously, you know, I remember him sitting on the bench when Ian Wright went in with 2 feet on Schmeichel, amongst other games, you know. So yeah, probably in and around then, you know, with his long fringe and circled glasses.
Yeah, yeah. Le professeur, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as an Arsenal fan, we were looking at Wenger turning up and just being sort of like... A lot of people were kind of very suspicious because they didn't have a great CV and they didn't know anything about him.
Yeah, like a teacher.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, me not being, you know, a proper football man, didn't mind the fact he looked like a teacher. I sort of thought, well, he looks like he's intelligent and that makes a nice change. But I think the fact that he turned up... after Vieira turned up, and everyone knew that Vieira was like his man, yeah. And then Vieira's like, I remember just the shockwaves in the Arsenal fan base when Vieira came on as a substitute against Sheffield Wednesday for his first game, and this was the very early days of the internet, so it was a bit more word of mouth. And
yeah,
it was a little bit. It was where Alta Vista was still kind of looking like the future, you know.
Yeah.
But just the shockwaves went around, and everyone was like, did you see? You'd hear people sort of, did you see that new bloke that just came on? And you know, they're just this. It's like this guy turned up.
And a star was born.
And it was just like everyone at the club's understanding about what was possible for an Arsenal midfielder. Slightly changed,
yeah.
Like overnight. And of course, Vieira was there. And by the time Wenger turned up, everyone's like, "Well, if he picked this guy for like not a lot of money from AC Milan's reserves, and he's 19, he's that good, maybe he knows what he's doing." You know,
yeah. That kind of...
So obviously, you know, we were going to look at a few games, and
yeah,
I mean, you highlighted the, you know, and it's nice for Arsenal fans to start with this one, the 3-2 at Highbury in that 97-98 season.
Yes.
I mean, what sort of particularly springs to mind for you about that, and why did you mention that one as a matter of interest?
I think because we went 2-0 down and we got it back to 2-2. And I just remember that very low angled shot of the pitch because the camera was quite low and quite close to the pitch at Highbury.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really just enjoyed that camera angle because it was so much closer to the actual grass.
Mm, mm.
But obviously the thing that sticks in my mind is David Platt's header in the top corner and running away and celebrating. You know, that's still a nightmare in my head. I could just still see his face flash up now and again when I think of that game. And obviously the blue strip that we were playing in as well, because I had that kit.
Ah, okay, yeah. I mean, for me, it was, you know, it was a game that stood out for lots of reasons. I mean, one, it was beating Man United, and beating Man United meant that if we've beaten them and we're kind of neck and neck, like, this is real, you know.
Yeah.
Because we hadn't had a proper title challenge since 91, really.
No.
And so it made it real that the possibility was there. It was also, Anelka got his first goal for Arsenal, that shot from the edge of the area.
Yeah.
Vieira scored that brilliant goal and then injured himself celebrating. and then Teddy fucking Sheringham.
The man himself.
Possibly the most hated opposition player by Arsenal fans, or one of the top three at the time. You know, obviously Spurs captain, and but also a player that had made a massive point of how much he hated Arsenal and how much he would never play for Arsenal, you know.
So just scored twice in 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like, the air went out the balloon.
Yeah.
And I think what also that Platt winner was had an air of improbability about it, because the game was so finely poised at that stage. And Arsenal, even then, had already started to, you know, it wasn't quite full Wenger ball, so we still occasionally scored from corners. But but a header from that far out, you know, and particularly as Platt was a player that hadn't, you know, had started really promisingly at Arsenal and then immediately got injured and then hadn't really done that much.
No.
For a player of his ability and reputation.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like his biggest single Arsenal moment, really, that goal. And probably the most valuable, one of the most valuable things he did that season. And there's always something more joyous about a surprising goal.
Yeah.
I think a goal that, you know,
out of the blue.
I mean, you know, obviously, so accelerate a few years, you got used to seeing Thierry Henry running through on the inside left with just the goalie to beat. And it became a nice, relaxing moment, you know, except in the biggest games. But but that was just, so such a surprise.
Well, I know what you mean, because, you know, when you talk about surprise goals, you know, you're talking about things like John O'Shea chipping David Seaman.
Ooh, yeah.
With his left foot.
I
get what you mean. Surprising goals are a lot more fun sometimes.
And obviously it turned out to mark the battle lines for the rest of that season, which were you know, it is very obviously going to be between those two teams, and it was going to be very close, and ultimately it was the Overmars goal at Old Trafford that where he should have scored about four times before he finally did, which ultimately decided the title, really, that year.
Yeah.
Because both teams went on amazing runs. I mean, Arsenal's the end of season run was ridiculous. They were unbeaten in like 18 games or something like that.
Yeah, they were unbeaten away from home, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
They scored in every game.
So it was one of those situations where it was a sort of dawning realization that we could maybe win the title against this all-powerful team. I mean, Man United's team was so well balanced at that point across midfield as well.
Beautiful midfield it was.
And the only thing that I think slightly let United down that season is that they didn't have quite the strength and depth defensively. But either way, they didn't have quite the same strength and depth defensively as the best United teams that season.
No.
And obviously the fact that Roy Keane had injured himself and missed most of the season, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Roy Keane does a lot to miss out on a lot of games over in the late 90s.
Yeah.
But that was the beautiful thing about him, even though his way of playing is not always beautiful. But he was a true captain in the sense that he did anything and everything for the team, no matter what expense for him personally, which I absolutely love about it. Even though he was a dirty player and, you know, he got sent off a lot and he was quite violent, but I quite like that.
I mean, the only, you know, I mean, obviously as an opposition player, you hated Roy Keane because he was so good and such a bastard. But the only thing I ever really, really held against him was that one on Alfinger Haaland.
Yeah.
Which was just, I mean, and then when he, and then when he admitted that he'd done it on purpose, and then and that, like, it ended the guy's career on purpose because he blamed him for doing his cruciate when even that was a, like, a Roy Keane foul in the first place. It was like a genuine psychopathic element.
Apparently it was because Hart, you know, there's no excuse, obviously, you know, when you intently go out to hurt somebody, you know, there's no excuse for that. But apparently Haaland said something to him in that game where he got injured.
Yeah,
so this was kind of Keane's revenge on that, which is, you know, a bit immature, but, you know, that's Roy Keane sometimes. He did this one thing in one game. I can't remember whether it was in Europe or not, but I think he jumped over a goalkeeper. The keeper had the ball. He jumped over the keeper and he put his foot down on top of the keeper with his studs. And it's like, dude, come on. What are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, he's always reminded me. I was actually watching last night, and it was quite prescient if we're talking about Roy Keane. I was watching Sexy Beast last night.
Love that film.
And Roy Keane does always remind me a little bit of Ben Kingsley as Don Roper. No.
Yeah.
Only with an Irish accent, but it's that same.
Yeah, exactly.
It's that same kind of. At any moment, he could fucking go off.
Nasty
is going to happen.
Yeah. You do want to cross him, basically, as a United player, probably, and the opposition. There were very few people that really sort of stood up to him in the game.
Yeah.
And Vieira was one of them.
And that was one of, obviously, the most enduring elements of that time period was the 7-8 year battle between Keane and Vieira.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Vieira was the younger player, and I mean, both were as good as anyone that's ever played in their position for their respective clubs. Mm. I mean, not necessarily in terms of the all-round package of a player.
Yeah, yeah.
But
they could both score goals as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Vieira was slightly more technically able, but Keane's strength of will. I mean, I'll never forget those games in Europe. I think, was it Juventus away and then Inter Milan away?
Yeah,
where,
I mean,
like, he single-handedly got United through.
Yeah, exactly. He basically got us to that 99 final by scoring. And unfortunately, getting booked and missing the game. The same with Paul Scholes. But Paul Scholes looked more devastated when he got booked than Roy Keane. Because, you know, he's probably trying to save face for Keane. But like I said, he put everything on the line, no matter what, you know, no matter what, whether it was a semi-final or a final, he would do anything to make sure that United won the game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's sort of just extraordinary, really. You think about those titanic struggles and every United Arsenal game at that point in time was like, it meant something because you knew it could decide the league title.
Yeah.
In one
game. Home and away.
Like, yeah.
Those two games were so important.
Yeah. I suppose, as I've had my nice moment, we have to talk about the bloody semi-final in 99.
Yeah, well, the semi-final replay of 99.
Yeah, the semi-finals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, what can you say? It was just another defining moment for Ryan Giggs. What can I say? I mean, people forget that. The game had it all.
Yeah, yeah. That second game was incredible.
Like, it really did. It was just insane that 2-1, and, you know, the Beckham goal, like, from what was it, like 35 yards or something like that.
Yeah, he had a habit of scoring great goals against Arsenal.
People just forget about that goal because of the Giggs goal. But the Beckham goal was insane because it was so far out, and to beat the likes of David Seaman from, you know, from that distance, you know, the only person that I remember having the same feeling was Ronaldinho.
I mean, to be honest, it was one of those things. I actually wrote an article about this the other day. Well, it wasn't about this. It was about a rival with Spurs. But it touched on the fact that as an Arsenal fan, you had total confidence in David Seaman unless someone was shooting from 25 yards or further. I don't know why, he seemed to have a slight weakness to like unexpected long shots.
Yeah, I think like he was just, the closer you got, the bigger he got. And it was a bit like Schmeichel as well. Mm. Like, and Seaman's ability to save penalties as well was, you know, another reason why he was so great.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think Schmeichel was a more explosive goalkeeper. Seaman was very, very good at... his greatest strength was being calm, which he could project that calm onto his defence. But he did, yeah, he wasn't the quickest moving his feet across his goal, unfortunately.
No, you're like, yeah, like you said, Schmeichel did come out of his goal quite a lot and make himself big a lot quicker. But no, I mean, two amazing shot stoppers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Bergkamp's goal.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit bit lucky. Slight deflection, yeah. I remember.
A very slight deflection off of Yap Stam, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, well, what can I say? All the joy that Patrick Vieira brought Arsenal when he first went there, all went as soon as he gave that ball to Ryan Giggs.
Well, hang on. Well, let's not forget the fact that two other really... Because in the rest of the second half, you know, Arsenal had obviously equalised. And then not long after that, Anelka had a goal disallowed for being marginally offside.
Yes, I do remember that.
And then we had... and then Roy Keane, very soon after, like 2 minutes late, was sent off for like
game, but because,
taking out Overmars.
Oh my God. I watched that today just to remind myself about how we got sent off, because this game just had everything. So it's really hard to remember everything.
Yeah.
Like the first yellow card, okay, you know, give it to that. Like he took him out. Totally wiped him out completely, didn't go for the ball, or, you know, missed it very marginally or whatever. Like the intent was there. But the second yellow card, if you look very closely, he doesn't actually touch Overmars.
Ooh.
He slides in, yes. But, you know, if there was any touch, it was very, very small. Because if you see from the camera angle I saw it at, he knew he was coming. So he knew that the foul was coming.
Yeah.
But when you looked quite as close as I could, he was airborne before Quick. Like, it felt like he was airborne before Keane even got there, you know?
I mean, to be fair, if Roy Keane was side and tackling me, I'd get fucking airborne quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You don't want any contact. So that's probably why the free kick, because if Mark Overmars didn't sort of try and get out of the way in some way, he would have, you know, taken out his knee, you know?
Yeah, and Overmars had already missed a year of his career due to a knee injury.
Yeah, so he would have been seriously injured.
Yeah.
But maybe that's my United bias saying that he was jumping before.
Well, I mean that's one of those ones that there is no absolute, so it is always defined by bias. Whichever way around your opinion is, if you know someone's coming into a tackle, someone jumps out the way and it appears to accentuate contact. Is it that they're just trying to avoid getting hurt, or is it that they're trying to draw the referee's attention? And
oh yeah, of course.
Who knows?
Yeah,
you know. So the only ones you can be sure about are the ones who are shit at it. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, of course, in the last minute of normal time, Ray Parlour's brought down for a penalty.
Oh my God! you know, when you're talking about the Neville brothers. When you're talking about the Neville brothers, you know, you always favour Gary over Phil all the time.
Yes.
And doing something like that didn't do Phil any favours at all.
Yeah, well, he was not averse to such things.
Oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. I mean, to go through all that drama with the sending off and the disallowed goal and the Beckham and the Bergkamp, like, there was this game was just building to a climax, and I thought that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was it. This is it now. we've lost, we're not going to win, like, potentially the treble. I was devastated. I was watching, but I couldn't watch all at the same time. It was a very strange feeling. And yeah, penalty stopper. He was, you know, he's huge in the goal, and it must have been for Bergkamp's quality.
Well, Bergkamp was one of those players who was, he was never that, he was a really strange player. He was obviously technically the most amazing player. Penalties was never the best. And also, he wasn't particularly good at direct free kicks either, even though in terms of taking a free, like, he was crap at taking corners, but taking free kicks to cross the ball in near the corner flag, he was as good as anyone I've ever seen. So it's like psychological weirdness there, but yeah. I mean, he never took another penalty in his career after that.
Oh, wow. Didn't know that.
Yeah, that was the last penalty he ever took in his career. He was just like, well, I'm done.
Oh, that's horrible.
But, you know. And then extra time started. Arsenal obviously still had the 11 men. Came close a couple of times. But then a tired Patrick Vieira played a loose crossfield pass.
Yeah, like 10, 15 yards into our half. And like the beauty of the Giggs goal is not only the distance, but at points he wasn't even touching the ball.
Yeah,
he was just moving his feet and his body to just confuse the Arsenal defenders. I think he did someone twice.
I think it may have been Lee Dixon.
Yeah, I think it was Dixon.
Who was running on treacle at that point.
and it's one of those goals that go over the goalkeeper, even though they're not, it's not like high, you know, if you know what I mean. He was quite close because he was in the area, but, and, you know, the celebration is famous as well. And, you know, there was a moment apparently listening to them talk after it, even now, Paul Scholes went to actually take his top off too when Giggsy scored. And then he had to remind himself, like, what are you doing?
So yeah, Giggs, you know. I couldn't really imagine Paul Scholes doing that. He's not really that sort of character.
No, he really isn't. So thankfully, you know, he took a little bit of control over that. But no, it was an amazing goal. And the final was okay.
Who did you beat in the final?
Newcastle.
Oh, yeah, because we had beaten the year before, yeah.
Yeah, it was 2-0 in the end, and it was quite an enjoyable, comfortable game, I felt.
Yeah, just like ours was the year before, yeah.
Yeah, so that was nice. But, no, the drama of the semi-final, you know, that should have been the final, in a way.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just between by far the best two teams. And of course, you know, any Arsenal fan you'll ask will say, you know, that if Bergkamp scores that penalty, Arsenal win the double because United wouldn't have won the league.
That's why I said, you know, that year was our year. It was just kind of meant to be with the penalty save and the wonder goal and the last goal in the Champions League final and the Andy Cole goal.
Yeah,
it was just those moments that define teams and define years in any Premier League year, really. Unless someone runs away with it, you know.
Yeah, it's true. Another game that you brought up was to give one for the Arsenal fans is the it was the 0-0 at the start of the Arsenal unbeaten run.
Yeah, which of course, I'm not surprised you went for that and not the 8-2 that I mentioned as well.
And well, that's I'm going chronologically.
Oh, okay.
I'm mostly focusing on the point when it was still a rivalry, frankly.
Yeah.
But yes, it's funny, isn't it? This game that everyone's main memory of it is Keown hanging like a vampire in the air over Van Nistelrooy.
It was a scene that I wasn't surprised to see. It was also quite horrible as well, seeing that happen and the look on Keown's face. Like, he really has a hatred for United. Well, even to this day, I think.
Well, I think it was one of those things where it was that was when the rivalry had got to absolute fever pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, like these teams did not fucking like each other. And it was partly because, you know, some of the characters from either team who were a bit more relaxed, shall we say, were slightly less, had either left or were not quite as important in their squads.
Mm-hmm.
It was also partly because, like, you speak to any Arsenal player from that era, and most Arsenal fans, and they all fucking hate Van Nistelrooy. Like, it's a weird thing. Like, there's the respect for Keane, even though he could be a vicious bastard. There's always, obviously, the respect for Scholes, because he's such a brilliant footballer, despite the fact that he wasn't...
Can't tackle,
but still kicks people, as if he can.
Yeah, because I just thought of a tackle that he did on... Was it Reyes?
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah.
When he did that high stud challenge on his knee, I think it was.
I mean, that was the game at the end of the unbeaten run, which we'll move on to.
Right, yeah.
But I think it was 2003, wasn't it?
Mm.
That was the game when Van Nistelrooy got Vieira sent off, and the Arsenal players had already had enough of Van Nistelrooy by then, because he'd let's just say I don't think there's any footballer I've disliked in my life as much as Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Van Nistelrooy, really, that bad?
Like, he was the king of, like, nasty off-the-ball shit.
Yeah.
Like, in the space of about 18 months, I remember he sort of stamped on Ashley Cole's knee, got Vieira sent off, In the game where Arsenal won the league at Old Trafford in 2002, he got away with punching Freddie Ljungberg in the stomach, which Sky Sports only ever showed once, and then seemed to delete the footage.
I mean, luckily, VAR wasn't around then.
Well, that's when everyone, like, you know, there was a big conspiracy theory, because Sky used at that point still owned loads of shares in United, so there was lots of question marks about the honesty of such things. But Van Nistelrooy had like a lot of beef with a lot of different players, but he was, I think it's because he was so calculating with it. Like, Keane was just a psycho.
Yeah, and he was more obvious with his sort of anger.
Well, also he just lost it. Or whereas Van Nistelrooy was, he always seemed to know exactly what the fuck he was doing and was always trying to do it to get a reaction.
There was a lot more calculating to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was the one where he'd got Vieira sent off by pretending to have been kicked when he hadn't actually been anywhere near to making contact.
Yeah, well, I'll have to look at that footage again after this.
Yeah, I mean, Vieira, like, he leaves one on Vieira, and Vieira sort of raises his foot in his direction, and Van Nistelrooy immediately remonstrates to the ref, backing away, waving his arms around. He was a nasty fucker. So obviously, when he won that penalty in the last minute, which a Keown foul in the area, which I've seen the replay so many times, I still can't tell if it's a foul or not. So I don't know. I don't know quite. It's one of those ones that it's like really not. It's like, is it a foul, or is the attacking player pulling the defender? And I can't tell. So it might have been a penalty, might not have been. But obviously, Van Nistelrooy takes the penalty, spanks it against the bar.
I know, I couldn't believe it. It's like, keep the ball down, man. Why are you whacking it so hard?
And obviously, then the Arsenal players all just basically wanted to rub his face in it.
Yeah, of course.
And yeah, it did get a bit unpleasant at full time.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, if you know, I either missed or can't remember, because you know the memory isn't that great sometimes, but I don't remember Nistelrooy being like that. But I can understand why the Arsenal players then would, you know, celebrate like they had won the game, you know, even though, you know, I just remember us being the better team that game, and it being 0-0, and being like, oh, we should have won that.
It was a pretty even game. Obviously, once Arsenal went down to 10, United were very much in the ascendancy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, losing Vieira is like losing two midfielders. So,
yeah.
So United, after Vieira got sent off, United should have won the game. Arsenal probably should have been... it definitely should have been level, had chances earlier on, but it was a really, really tight game, which is why it was so tense, I think, as well. Yeah. And then United obviously were dominant late on. But
maybe
yeah,
that's the memory that I've got in my head.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, United had the chances to win the game, and of course, we all, you know, if a game's tight, we all remember the last 10 minutes more than we remember the first 10 minutes, unless something spectacular happens. And then, of course, for Arsenal, that was a massive moment because it sparked the start of their very lengthy unbeaten run and their unbeaten title.
49 unbeaten run, yeah.
Yeah, which I suppose, I mean, much as I'd love to luxuriate in that, I suppose that naturally takes us on to the next time the two teams met at Old Trafford.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was the huge controversy over the penalty, obviously.
I mean, that was a game that was controversial in lots of ways. I mean, again, it was another one where it was so tight and there was so much riding on it. I think almost every single Arsenal fan will say that they were totally cheated in that one. But I expect Man United fans might have a different perspective.
Oh, well, you're of course. I mean, you said it there. I'll say no more on the matter.
I mean, my main memory of that game, apart from obviously Wayne Rooney shamelessly diving to win the penalty. I mean, it was Mike Riley as referee who... is in charge of the referees in Britain now, much to my chagrin, who famously, when United, I think, won the title the year before, I think Mike Riley gave them something like 10 penalties in 11 games.
Wow, I mean, that is generous.
So, I mean, to be fair, United were playing brilliantly and probably deserved most of those penalties. But then, there was definitely a degree of suspicion coming into the game.
Yeah,
and that was the game where United players took turns to basically try and kill Jose Reyes.
Yes, and that obviously goes on to my comment that I made a minute ago about Scholes' challenge on him that basically nearly broke his leg.
Well, the thing is, it was the fact that was so made Arsenal fans so angry is that was after both both the Neville brothers and... was it Nicky Butt or someone else had already given him the proper treatment already? He'd literally, they kicked the fuck out of him for 20 for 30.
Yeah, wasn't sure who, and then Nicky Butt wasn't playing that game.
No, it was, no, I know so Gary sure Neville, I know Gary Neville gave him like the proper treatment until eventually got booked and then someone else took over kicking him.
Probably Rooney, maybe, I don't know.
Rooney got, Rooney left of... a high foot in and got told off quite early on against someone else. But like, it was a real heavy game. And the other thing that I suspect United fans probably don't remember, but I bet most Arsenal fans do, is that quite early on, Ljungberg was put through on goal and Rio Ferdinand basically took him out when he was clean through on goal.
Yeah,
and the referee didn't even give a free kick. But it was like a subtle taking out. It was like he like body checked him from behind.
So
it wasn't really obvious. But like as soon as you saw the replay, you're like, oh my god! Like he's totally fucking taking him out when he's through on goal. So there were a lot of things that made Arsenal fans very angry in that game.
You know, what's ironic, though, about that is that United, Rio Ferdinand actually got man of the match that game.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. That moment aside, Rio Ferdinand was brilliant in that game. Rio Ferdinand was obviously an amazing defender.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the fact that he even got there to foul Ljungberg was actually quite impressive because he was so clean through, you know.
Yeah, well, it was when Rio could run, you know.
Yeah, well, and then obviously...
go on.
Well, obviously, you know, whatever... I mean, that was an interesting thing I found actually about Ferguson's teams is that, you know, he wasn't afraid to... like up the physical ante.
Yeah.
And you saw it sometimes in the European games when they're particularly when they're at home. But that was a game where definitely because Arsenal had been so good and Arsenal that season had like won, I don't know, something like 9 or 8 and drawn 2 and had scored a fuck ton of goals and were flying basically.
Yeah.
And so obviously Ferguson chose a different approach. You know, he's like, well, we can't just overpower this lot through playing great football.
No.
And it was, I think it's the first time I remember like a good team, like trying to out physical Arsenal. Like normally you only got the shit teams doing that. But the fact United did it, A, was sort of a sign of respect, but B, it also showed everyone else that that was a way to play against Arsenal as well.
Yeah, I mean, technically, you know, you had a great starting 11, and even on the bench, you had the likes of Pires, Fabregas, and Van Persie.
Yeah, I mean, that was the best Arsenal squad of my lifetime.
Yeah,
Marginally better than the 98 team, which was a brilliant first team, but slightly weaker squad.
Yeah.
But of course, the United squad at that stage. What I always found really frustrating about United at that stage is. Like you mentioned earlier with John O'Shea.
Yeah.
You'd have these players that really weren't all that.
Squad players, basically.
But they were squad players, but they were like proper, like they were the players you're thinking, this lot are all staying at United even though they're not playing very often because they know damn well if they go to some mid-table team, they're not even going to be that good in the mid-table team. You know,
yeah, who would have thought that Wes Brown would have a Champions League medal?
Yeah. Or... Or going back a bit further, that David May would have a title winning medal.
What a man. What a man.
Or Phil Neville. All those medals.
All those medals, exactly, yeah.
So it always felt like Arsenal had to be better than United to win, which obviously, I suppose, shows how good a manager Ferguson was.
Yeah, and how much he respected Arsenal, like the way they played football, you know. The only way that we can beat them is we add a bit of physicality into it.
But that was probably, that was like towards the end of the great rivalry.
Was that also when the pizza was thrown?
Yes. when Fabregas threw a pepperoni pizza and it landed on Ferguson's shirt, and that's why Ferguson was wearing different clothes in the post-match interview.
Yeah, that's a change.
But what I loved about that is like these two teams fucking hated each other, and that game was like the epitome of these two teams hating each other, but still no one ratted out Fabregas for about another decade.
which is
that strange thing of that there's this honour amongst rivals in some strange way.
No one mentioned anything about it.
I don't think we should talk about it for any great length of time, but you mentioned also the Arsenal Cup final win at the end of that season when they had lost the league, but somehow beat United on penalties. And for me, it was a funny one because I didn't actually see the game live. I only caught it later because that was the point in my life when I realised I was probably quite interested in acting, because I chose to miss the FA Cup final against Man United to go to a rehearsal for something I wasn't even doing anything significant for. And maybe it was because I was shitting myself, I don't know. But that was the kind of point where I realised, if I've made that choice, this is obviously something significant. But of course, that was the last time Arsenal won a final in about 9 years.
Obviously, I was devastated because, you know, watching that game, I was just like, how have we not won this? Like, to go down to penalties, I was like, well, this is anyone's game now. And it will be absolutely heartbreaking if it don't go our way. But, you know, that's football. Sometimes it's, you can dominate a game and someone scores in the 90th minute, or, you know, you lose on penalties or whatever. It's all go down to 10 men. You know, I think there was a game in Europe where we were playing someone like Madrid or Barcelona or something, and Nani got sent off.
Yeah.
For a high foot, which is ridiculous, because not only did he not see his back was turned to the player, there was no intent or anything like that, and then he went and got sent off when we were playing a lot better than the other team.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those ones that I remember watching it at the time and going, you see, United may have a good run with British refs, but in Europe you don't fuck with the refs for Barcelona or Real Madrid. They own that shit.
But no, that 0-0 FA Cup is just, it was a bitter pill to swallow when, you know, they were walking up the steps. I mean, I don't know if I watched it. I might have. just out of
that thing of wanting to feel the pain when you're the fan. You know, you can't quite take your eyes away from it.
No, exactly. But no, it was again, like you say, the rivalry between those two teams were just so raw sometimes.
Mm.
And I just don't think the derbies or I know it wasn't a derby, but it felt like it even like North London derbies or the Manchester derbies, you know, they're not quite the same.
No.
Anymore.
Well, it's also,
I don't know why.
Well, it's partly because our relationship as fans has probably changed a bit, but it's also that, you know, I mean, with United and Arsenal at that point, it was every fucking year.
Yeah.
It was one or the other. And they were the two best teams.
The season, wasn't it?
Yeah. They were the two best teams. You knew that one of them was probably going to win the league.
Mm.
You knew that one of them was probably going to win the FA Cup. You knew that one of them was going to, you know, have a good run in one of the other competitions. And you knew that these are the two best teams. And you knew they hated each other, particularly by that point.
Mm.
You know, a bit, in sort of the late 90s, United were the stronger teams. There wasn't quite that level of malevolence between the two teams that had built up over years.
Yeah. But what was the game where Wenger got sent off to the stands?
Oh,
what game? Do you remember that game? And then he was just standing up there because he didn't know where to go.
Well, it's also the referee didn't tell, just point him vaguely in the direction of somewhere.
Yeah, just can't remember what game that was.
I just
remember him standing there with his arms out, his palms facing the referee, like going, where do you want me to go? Like, you've sent me off.
It was 2009.
Right.
It was a 2-1 defeat for Arsenal. God, who was sent? I'm going to have to look up the match report here. I can't remember who scored the goal. Who scored the goals? Oh yeah, that's it. He was sent to the stands by Mike Dean on the advice of Lee Probert because he kicked a water bottle.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was 30 seconds to go in a match where Arsenal were losing 2-1.
Yeah, that's probably what made it so much more ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, it was Mike Dean being Mike Dean, wasn't it? I mean,
being a twat.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Mike Dean's always liked to find a way to make somehow the moment about him.
But Mike Dean is one of those sort of last referees that are a little bit like, I don't know, not famous, but
he's become a celeb ref.
A bit like Mark Clattenburg.
Yeah. Although Mark Clattenburg was a sort of different sort of idiot. Mark Clattenburg is the kind of person you suspect you probably wouldn't want to, like, you just think he's a bit of a bell end. Whereas Mike Dean's, there's something more self-conscious about it, I think.
Yeah, but Mark Clattenburg tried to be the player's mates.
Yeah.
So he tried to be mates with everybody, where Mike Dean knew he was the authority. And he reveled in that.
Yeah, I mean, we've all seen him getting his Saturday Night Fever on when we give him penalties.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be a like a half decent ref when you're known by your name and you get brought up in conversations like Graham Pohl.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, I mean, Graham Pohl was a decent ref.
When he gave three yellow cards to a guy in a World Cup game.
Yeah. So just from, I mean, this is interesting to get your perspective as a non-Arsenal fan before we move on. Like, who would you say are like the good refs and the crap refs in the Premier League at the moment? Because I know what I think, but is that an Arsenal bias or not? I don't know. So I wanted to just see if you had any thoughts.
This is me rattling my brain to try and think of the referees in the game currently, apart from Mike Dean. I don't know if I know them by name unless I hear it, like, or see their face. I probably know their face before I know their name.
Like, for me, I think even though he doesn't often give Arsenal any freebies, I think Michael Oliver's a very good ref.
Yeah.
But
I'd agree.
But I'd say John Moss is a shit ref.
John Moss. Let me see his face.
He's the tubby scouser, the one who can never quite keep up with play.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember him now. See, like, faces more than names.
Yeah, sure. No, I was just wondering, because I tend to kind of take more interest in such things and is probably healthy, so I was wondering if you had a perspective. So I suppose we have to mention it. I'll just talk, just before we do, I have to say that 2005 final, when I saw the replay, how much Man United should have won that game by like 3 or 4 goals. It was ridiculous.
I know. Yeah, like I said, that's what made it even more painful, that we lost on penalties as well.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to lose in a way in the FA Cup, I don't know if I'd rather get a last-minute goal or sit through extra time and penalties. I think to save my heart, I probably would have gone with just get a late goal, get it done. If I know I'm going to lose in the end anyway, just score now.
Yeah.
So I don't have to go through the emotions of a penalty shootout.
Yeah, put it out of the misery. Yeah, that was Vieira's last kick for Arsenal, was the winning penalty in that game. There we go.
There you go. It was meant to be.
So we have to talk about it.
Like one of my close friends, he still says to this day, yeah, but you still only get 3 points. No matter how many goals you score, you only get 3 points. So, you know, it's not really that great. Yeah.
So, yeah, we're obviously, you've worked out by now, listeners, we're talking Manchester United 8, Arsenal 2.
Yeah. It was such an odd game because because over the years, I built up this respect for Arsenal. I always want them to do well, not at the expense of us, obviously.
Obviously.
You know, them being a close second, I would love for us to get back to where we were in the 90s and early noughties to rival each other like we used to.
Mm.
But I'm assuming we're going to touch upon current day at some point.
Yeah,
we'll this chat. But to watch that game, it felt like, I don't know, once it got to like 4, I was like, right, okay, cool, this is great. This is nice. This is such a lovely sort of, you know, you're 3-1 up at halftime. You're like, Arsenal still could come back from this, but I feel pretty confident that, you know, we're going to win it. I just never, ever saw that it was going to be that many.
Well, I mean, my really strong overriding memories from this game, there's a couple of things, which is, one, I mean, I think it was probably the weakest Arsenal starting 11, like, for a big game. Not like a Champions League dead rubber, but like there were players playing in that game that under normal circumstances would be nowhere near the team. There were 4 kids on the bench who hadn't even like ever played for the team.
Mm.
Jenkinson had made his debut, got sent off.
Yeah.
having just signed from Charlton. You had Armand Traore playing left back who had already agreed a deal to be sold to QPR the next day.
God.
Johan Juru at centre half.
I mean, it wasn't the best team. I see what you mean.
Coquelin was straight out of the youth team and hadn't really played. Basically, you had
Shamaka on the bench. I mean, that's got to count for something, surely.
So you had Van Persie, Arshavin, Walcott, Rosicki, Koscielny, Szczesny. So there was some strength in the team, but so I remember going into the game shitting myself because just looking at the Arsenal ever going, we're going to get torn a new one here. And then the other thing I remember at the game is, apart from Welbeck's early goal, and the frankly embarrassing defending for Nani's goal, like all the other United goals in that game were like amazing goals.
Yeah,
like
insane, like, weren't they? Like the 2 free kicks from Rooney.
Yeah,
were just mental, and Ashley Young came into his own that game and scored 2 absolute blinders.
I mean, it's not often like if in a game where you're getting battered where half the goals are scored from 20 yards out or further and all in the postage stamp.
Yeah.
I actually went back and... Because I was thinking, is my memory of that correct? So I actually went back and watched the highlights before we started recording, and I was like,
Yeah,
there were those just four of the goals that were from like miles out, and no one in the world could have saved them.
No. I mean, yeah, you could have been any goalkeeper, really, in the goal. Those sort of, when you're getting them right in the corner, it's, you know, you've got to be, you know, go gadget to get that, you know?
Well, I'd also completely forgotten that Van Persie missed a penalty at 1-0 to United in that game. Yeah. Like, it was really weird as well, because Van Persie was normally like, take a penalty, twat it like a bullet into the top corner.
But
like,
it was such a bad penalty.
It was a shit penalty, yeah.
Such a bad penalty.
Which was like, again, totally out. Either he, like, normally if he missed a penalty, it's because he like absolutely pinged it, but it went wide. But he just sort of, it was like a back pass.
Yeah.
And no, that was at 1-0, and then, like, a minute later, Ashley Young scored from, like, 25 yards out into the top corner. And actually, like, oh, it's not our day, is it?
No, it really wasn't. And just coming up the reeling from that afterwards, it was just like, I don't know how to be now. I don't know how to, do I, I've never been, I've never gloated, ever. Mm. As a football fan,
it's a rare thing.
tongue in cheek, yeah, like having a laugh with my mates, but I wouldn't like wind strangers up or like wind my mates up to the point where, you know, you have an argument or whatever. But I even chatting to my mate Alan about it, who's been an Arsenal fan for a long time. I said, dude, like, I don't know what to say. Like, obviously, I'm happy and over the moon that it was so many, but it was just, this is so bizarre that games like this hardly ever happen, really.
Mm.
The only other memory that I mentioned to him, that, and he said that he forgot completely, is when United beat Arsenal 6-1.
Yeah.
And Dwight York got a hat-trick.
And that was another game where Arsenal had, like, fucking anyone who could tie a pair of boots playing in defence. Like, I think it was, like, Igor Stepanovs and Oleg Luzhny as a central defensive partnership, which is like, what? Why the fuck are these guys even playing for Arsenal Football Club?
I just remember it being a very, like, the sun was out, and it looked like a very hot day, and, And just that game was just insane as well. Not really knowing how to react when your team scores that many goals, you know?
Well, I mean, I remember that obviously a lot of Arsenal fans went into absolute meltdown afterwards, particularly as it had been a disappointing few years leading up to that.
But
I was sort of relatively calm about it because I was like, well, look at the players on the pitch. Like, only one of those defenders and only one of those midfielders would normally be in our team. And United scored four goals from outside the area, like, and a penalty, which was, let's just say, an Old Trafford penalty.
Yeah.
And
I'm just looking at the 11 and the substitutes as well. Like, I didn't even realise, because, like, looking at the starting 11, you know, you got Evra, Jones, Evans and Smalling in defence. Anderson, Nani, Young, Cleverley, and then Rooney and Welbeck up front.
When Anderson could still run.
Yeah, exactly.
Before
yeah.
he got you too fat.
You had Ferdinand, Giggs, Jason Park and Berbatov and Chicharito all on the bench.
Yeah.
Which is just insane.
And you look at Arsenal's bench for that same game, you've got Fabianski, like a 17-year-old Oxlade-Chamberlain, Shamak, Henry Lansbury, I think he played twice for Arsenal before being sold, Ignacio Mikel, who never really did very much. Ozyakup, who was sold without making a league game. And Gilles Sunu, who I think never played in the league for Arsenal. So it's literally like... The fact that Arshavin was sort of playing up front says quite a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you look at a game like that and, you know, you'd be looking at the teams, you'd think you'd win 3, maybe 4-0.
Yeah, yeah.
But to have that, it was just crazy. Absolutely crazy.
I mean, you're too young to remember, but I actually remember growing up watching Arsenal lose 6-2 at home to United in the League Cup and I think about 1990. And Lee Sharp, who may have been even 89, Lee Sharp, who had just like signed from Torquay, got a hat trick when nobody knew who the hell he was.
Remember his celebrations.
Yeah, he was a bit of a party boy, which is a shame. Yeah. He sort of slightly wasted his career.
He was really good mates with Giggsy, wasn't he?
Mm.
And they kind of went in two different directions.
Well, the problem was that Giggs played in the same position.
there is that as well. He's understudy.
Yeah. I suppose we have to sort of, just before we wrap up, talk about where things are at now.
Present day.
As a big contrast to all those times. I don't think any listeners will thank me if I start talking about Van Persie transfers or anything. So we'll gloss over that, because I think that's a way to get me blacklisted. Where do you see things with United at the moment? I mean, ignoring the fact that we now have a rivalry of mediocrity between the two clubs.
Yeah, exactly. It's like our rivalry now is who's going to get Europa League.
Yeah.
Which is a sad state of affairs. But I think current day, there's so much talk of, since Fergie left, there's been like a few trophies that we've won here or there. The highest point was probably second with Mourinho, and then winning Europa to get into the Champions League, and probably the FA Cup win because of Lingard's goal. But current day, I just feel like we could be with three or four more good signings. I think we could probably not challenge maybe for the league, but be up there a little bit more. Bit more comfortable than we are actually now, because I feel like we're sort of really fighting to stay in fourth when we're losing to the teams that we shouldn't be losing to, like Watford. But that's what I love, but also it's such a weird headspace to be in, because I love the way that any team could beat anyone in the Premier League.
Yeah, I was going to say, everyone loses to Watford.
Yeah, exactly.
Except for the shit teams, yeah.
Yeah, so anyone could beat anyone, but I think looking at the squad, United squad right now, is we've got a few youngsters coming through, which is lovely to see. And I think days of old, you would give a manager a little bit more time. But current day, the fact that we've been through, four or five managers since Fergie left in 6 years, 7 years? It's not really good enough, and not what I want to see in my club doing, you know?
Do you think any of those managers were a good fit for United?
I felt like David Moyes wasn't given enough time.
I think that's fair, yeah.
In an aging squad, he wasn't given the time, the resources to build anything. And that's a lot to do with, because Fergie and David Gill left, it left two massive holes in high level at United. And but it's because of that, I think he got let down a lot by the board and by the money coming in and only doing a last minute Fellaini buy,
I was astounded that that's all they gave him to spend at that period in time.
It was so ridiculous, and that was only because he was at Everton and he was half decent there, scoring a few goals or whatever. But I think I'm hoping that we're past the worst of it, and the board just need to give Solskjaer the time and the money to try and develop what he's trying to do, because you're not going to get, we are 2 or 3 years behind, at least 2 or 3 years behind the likes of Liverpool and City at the moment. But then in three,
aren't we all?
Yeah. But like in 2 or 3 years, you don't know where they're going to be either.
Yeah.
So with the likes of Aguero and David Silva and Pep probably not being there, These are players that will leave eventually, or who's going to be there to replace them, So football's a bit up in the air for me at the moment.
I mean, where do you stand on Solskjaer? Are you happy with him being in charge?
I am for the moment, yeah. I think, like I said, if we'd have gotten rid of Fergie after 3 years, you know, we wouldn't have had the success that we did have.
Indeed.
And I know Fergie had more of a pedigree then, but I think Solskjaer knows what he wants to do, and I think he just needs to be given that time. But the thing that annoys me about it is that I can deal with the fees, maybe the millions and hundreds of millions that you got to pay, but it's the wages that they get. It's the wages that United players are on and not even playing for us. Like Sanchez, it's like we're paying him 400 grand a week or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he was either not good enough, which they should have seen a mile off, injured, or elsewhere. Like, he's in Italy.
Yeah, yeah.
And even they don't want him. So we just need to bite the bullet, pay him off, get rid of him, and like we did Mourinho. But I don't know. It's hard to know whether Moyes would have done any better. Louis van Gaal, I love the way that he entrusted in the youth coming through at United.
He's always done that throughout his career, Van Gaal.
Yeah. And I think they benefited in that, and they did really, really well considering they were really young. And then it was obviously Mourinho got the job the day after the FA Cup final, which I thought was pretty shady.
Standard Mourinho.
Yeah.
Massive see you next Tuesday. Yeah.
And at that moment, you know, when we got second in the league, I was like, you know what, I'm pretty impressed with that. But looking back, I should have been more impressed because of the team that we had. It wasn't really that good at that time. And the fact that Mourinho got second, it was pretty amazing looking back at it. But I don't want to be that United fan looking back and being pleased with second. You know?
Well, it's also that, you know with Mourinho that you're going to get short-term results, but the question mark with him is always what happens after that.
Well, it's the longevity, isn't it?
Yeah. What happens after that is Mourinho gets a new contract and then immediately starts shitting the bed left, right and centre and gets so he can get a massive payoff.
Yeah, exactly what he did.
Yeah, and that's the thing, as an Arsenal fan watching that, I was like, I can't believe United are falling for it. This is like his MO. Not like winning titles anymore. He's like being runner-up and still getting the same fucking trust.
No, that's what fucked me off. They were so naive about it. They just didn't give it a moment. Just take a breath, man. Take a step back. Why are you rushing into this, man? He's still going to be there. He's still in contract. It's not like he was leaving the next day.
And also, what's the longer-term plan? I mean, oh, I was just on this, just before. I want to know, as a United fan, A, what do you think should happen with Paul Pogba? And B, you mentioned three or four players. What positions do you think United need?
We need a decent backup for Rashford.
Fair.
we can't keep relying on him to come up with the goods. We need, even though he's amazing and he should be doing what he's doing, and he did really well until we got injured. He really came back into form.
Yeah.
But we need a backup classic number nine. The guy that stays in the box, plays off the last defender and gets you goals. And we don't have that. In terms of midfield, I mean,
you must be happy with Bruno Fernandes.
Oh, Bruno Fernandes was the breath of fresh air. He was just—it's just so annoying we didn't get him in the summer.
Yeah,
but him coming in was just beautiful. And you know, when Football Fantasy came around, everybody wanted him. And you know, unfortunately, at that point, which was looking back, because I was bottom of my Football Fantasy for so long. I was 11th. I was rock bottom. The forfeit was you had to do a 5-minute stand-up set at the end of the season if you came last. I was already writing my jokes. I was already like looking for stories that were funny, and then I sort of hit my stride, and I got up to mid-table, and then as soon as Bruno Fernandes came up for grabs, I just wasn't going to get him because there were five or six teams below me trying to get him as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but he is amazing, and I think it's either saved Pogba's career at United because he says he wants to play alongside him.
Mm.
But I just think that's... I know he's been injured a lot this season and he gets a lot of flack. He gets a lot of like drama, and the first person to get it in the neck is him, regardless of whether he's played well or his stats are better than everybody else's.
Mm, mm.
But I think I'm a bit like Fergie at times when, you know, if a player is disrupting the other players or disrupting or in the news too much and it's distracting, just get rid of him. No matter how good he is, get shot of him, because I think to have a player that's as good as him and doesn't rock the boat too much, I think that's a far better player to have in your team.
Well, I think it's also going to be difficult to effectively accommodate the two in the same team, because I think United misunderstood what they were buying when they bought Pogba. Mm-hmm. I think they bought him thinking he was going to be like a more attacking Patrick Vieira because of his build and what have you. But as Juventus, he played as a sort of slightly free roll roaming central three left sided player. Mm-hmm. And we've all seen that's where he's most comfortable. Despite the fact he gets great stats because he's so talented, he obviously is going to score goals and set up.
I mean,
goals.
When you look at the season that he had with Ibrahimovic,
yeah,
most of Zlat's goals came from a Pogba assist.
But people expect Pogba to be this kind of dominating central midfielder, where he's actually more of a creative peripheral player. Mm. And I think there's been that misunderstanding has really harmed his second United career. And I think also there's the baggage of him having left for free has also added a lot into that.
But I think going back to like players that we need, I think that we don't have a real leader.
Not many teams do these days, unfortunately.
I just don't think there's that sort of player that will shout at everyone. I think the only player that I see doing that are people like Harry Maguire and Marcus Rashford.
Yeah.
They're the only two that I really see speaking up. I like our defence. I think our defence is just developing into something because Williams coming into the team, he's done really well, surprisingly well.
Indeed. No one knew who he was 12 months ago.
Yeah. And I think if United look after him, I think he'll be our left back for a long time. Central midfielder. Because I think, again, the strength and depth, I'm not sold by McTominay. I think Matic kind of saved himself this side of the season.
I'd agree.
Mata, I love the guy. I really do. Who doesn't? But he doesn't get played enough. And the impact is just not there. The impact from him is not there. Lingard can go. Jones can go. These sort of filler squad members, Lingard didn't get a goal for the whole of last season. I don't think he's even got an assist this season, as well as no goals. You know, if you're not doing anything for the last two seasons, unfortunately, you got to go unless your form picks up.
Yeah, he's been even worse than Mesut Ozil in terms of stats.
Well, yeah. but no, he's like one thing I don't like is Lingard getting like abused.
No,
you know, outside of, you know, trying to get onto a coach and getting abuse thrown at him, that's not on. But he definitely needs to pull his finger out, that's for sure.
So finally, just because,
well, I was going to say, like, what about Arsenal? Like, what?
Well, I was going to ask you as an outside observer, what you thought of the current situation at Arsenal, you know, with Arteta and the players they have and what have you. What, you know, don't have to go in depth, but just what's your viewpoint?
I mean, it's funny because obviously you beat us 2-0 this season, but looking at your roster and looking about, you know, your best player obviously is Boomerang up front.
Yeah.
And I think you've got to do a lot to keep hold of him.
Tell me about it.
You've got to do so much to hold on to him, because I think the players behind him for Arsenal aren't good enough. Unfortunately, I think Arsenal are even further behind than us, because we've been trying to rebuild. Like, it feels like our rebuild has been going on for years and years and years. Where, you know, Arsene Wenger stayed on a little bit longer than he should have, like you said. So that rebuild started later as well.
Mm.
I think for United and Arsenal, I think, you know, you've got to really be a lot smarter in who you're buying, how much you're buying them for, and building a team rather than trying to get individuals in. I know it's like, it sounds obvious, but when you look at old teams of Arsenal and United in the Wenger and the Fergie heydays, not everyone was world-class, but they did their bit. You know, they filled the numbers, they scored a goal here and there, you know, they put a shift in. But I just think, yeah, the Arsenal team now, there's a lot of young people. Like, your defence isn't great, to put it nicely. I think to get a decent, you need some decent centre backs. That's a start. Some decent centre backs to stop those goals going in, and that will help the keeper as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think most Arsenal fans are pretty happy with Bernd Leno in goal. I mean, from an Arsenal fans' perspective, it's sort of weird because obviously we've got a new coach since Christmas.
Yeah,
and although the results haven't all been there compared to Unai Emery, you're looking at it and you're saying, well, at least I can see what's trying to happen.
Yeah, because wasn't there that stat that Unai Emery, if that's how you say his name, like he subbed his, like, didn't he not start with the same 11 for, like, he's like well known to sub people in and out all the time and not start with the same 11 for any game ever.
Yeah, particularly towards the end where it became increasingly like a man, I don't know, firing darts at a dartboard and hoping one of them's going to give him the right answer, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, the last nine, you know, the end of last season and the start of this season under Emery, it became, I mean, most Arsenal fans just stopped really bothering because it was like, we can't even tell what's trying to happen anymore. So it's like, you know, it became kind of depressing to watch the games because the team was playing badly. They weren't getting good results. And you couldn't even see, like, you're looking at it just going, they're just, like, nearly everyone apart from Aubameyang's playing worse than they should be. But there's also nothing, like, there's nothing, like, it's like they've all just met.
And yeah.
like
they don't train together.
Yeah, like, it gave the impression of a bit like when you turn up and play five-a-side for the first time in like 5 years and and your mates haven't turned up and you're with some randoms and you're trying to work out what each other do.
Yeah, exactly.
But at least with Arteta turning up, you can say, okay, so there is some cohesion to the thought process, and also he clearly doesn't take any shit, which is kind of a nice change. As opposed to Emery, who pretended not to take any shit and then basically went back on everything. Yeah. And I think, you know, Arsenal, as you say, I think are a bit behind United in a lot of ways. But I think what can give both clubs a bit of hope is there is an emerging younger core of players that you know, some of them are through the youth ranks or some of them are signings, who've yeah. shown enough to think, okay, some of these players could be around for a good while, which again then obviously makes those extra signings that you need to the top quality more plausible, particularly for Arsenal, who've got less money, but even for United, you know.
But looking at like gossip on the gossip column on BBC, it's they touch upon Sancho every day.
Yeah.
Every day. Where's he going? Is it Real Madrid? Is it Chelsea? Is it Liverpool? Is it United? And they keep on like dropping a lot of hope into every United fan's heart.
Yeah.
That he's favouring coming to United, apparently. Don't quote me on that.
Well, I've read the same dubiously sourced stories.
Yeah, saying there's one player that's persuading him at United to go to United so they can tear it up. And you're looking at the likes of like Lingard and Rashford, probably are the closest people to him.
Well, it's going to be Rashford, isn't it? Because he's not going to take Lingard seriously.
But Rashford's really good mates for Lingard, isn't he? So I can imagine they all sort of are in touch with each other because, you know, they're in the England squad as well. So it's, pay the money to get him there, you know, because he's obviously smashing it in the Bundesliga for Dortmund, who are a great side. And again, I know it's the German league and only three teams that are pushed, but basically Bayern Munich win the league there. Like, there's not much of a challenge, but a great place to develop yourself. And I think he's been there long enough to make that big move, even though he's still very young. I think to see him in a United shirt would be glorious once the new season starts, you know, whenever that will be.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, as an Arsenal fan, it's frustrating because we've come really close to getting hold of Jadon Sancho about three times because he's obviously, you know, he's from London. You know, his best mate growing up is Reece Nelson, who's an Arsenal player.
Yeah.
But he got poached from Watford to go to Man City as a kid, and then when he left Man City, he had a choice between Arsenal and Dortmund, but City basically made it very clear that they would not let him go to Arsenal under any circumstances. And now, of course, Arsenal can't afford him, so it's irrelevant. I mean, it's an interesting one. I suppose he, like a lot of other people, sort of waiting to see what United do next, because is it the best move for him, or what other options are there, you know?
Well, the other options for Sancho is to go to Madrid, Barcelona, Juve, you know, like, they're the only teams that you could really go to of his quality.
Or maybe Man City, if they sell Leroy Sané.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not sure that he'd been quite so welcome back, having left under a cloud, though, but...
No, I think Sané will definitely go too, but I don't know, I think... I'm hoping that the rumours are true and Sancho is in a United shirt next season.
Well, funnily enough.
Only time will tell.
Only time will tell.
Yeah.
All right then. Well, I think we've done a pretty good journey through the last 20, 25 years of Arsenal Man United.
And the sadness of our current situation.
Well, you know, there's some sort of something poetic about us both being mediocre together.
Yeah, we've been on the same journey.
So, yeah,
similar journey.
Not so dissimilar. The only difference being that we've never had to break bread with that fuckbag Mourinho. But so, yeah, I think that's probably a good time to wrap things up. So, because you probably need to get to bed at some stage.
Pretty tired. Got another early start tomorrow morning.
So, with that in mind, thanks very much for coming on and having
Thank you for having me.
A little jaunt down memory lane together.
Yeah, it's always nice.
And thank you for tuning in, listeners. Hope you've enjoyed it. If you got this far, if you didn't, I forgive you. And I'll come back to speaking to you soon with some other podcast goodness, even though there's no football at the moment, very shortly. So thanks and take care, one and all. Bye.